Good afternoon, you're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Clare Byrne. On today's programme, are weeks of inertia on the cards as Fine Gael waits for a leader to leave and a new one to take over. The unions have the strike posters printed as Bus Éireann meets on Monday to consider imposing across-the-board cuts. And why is Fianna Fáil standing firm against plans to make our drink driving laws stricter? All of this and more to come in the next hour. First, though, it's time for the news now with Brian Finn.
Good afternoon. The headlines. The GAA is to introduce radical changes next year.
Brian, thank you very much. This is Saturday with Clare Byrne and you're very welcome to get in touch over the next hour. Text us on 51551, email saturday@rte.ie and on Twitter it's @SaturdayRTE. Joining us today in our studio we have Patrick O'Donovan, Fine Gael Minister of State for Tourism and Sport, Robert Troy, Fianna Fáil TD and Spokesperson on Transport, Tourism and Sport, Breed Smith, People Before Profit TD, AA People Before Profit TD I should say, Kevin Doyle, Group Political Editor with the Irish Independent Group and Alison O'Connor, columnist with The Examiner. You're all very welcome. Thank you for coming in today. I suppose we'll start with the story that lots of people say they're sick of, but we're all obsessed with, and it is a political programme. So, hey, the Irish Independent, Kevin, this week ran on three consecutive days. I think it started in the Sunday Independent, actually. Photographs of Simon Coveney with his wife alongside pictures of Leo Varadkar alone. And then the paper ran a common piece which said, the electorate and the public take comfort in their leaders having the support of loyal spouses of the opposite sex. Do you agree with that?
I think the article went on to also say a lot of other things. Like you're picking out one line perhaps in it. A lot. To be honest, I was a bit surprised.
That's a definitive view though, isn't it? Is that the view of the Irish Independent?
No. That is a view that is held out there by people. And I think I've heard a lot said about this. And I was actually surprised by the reaction that there was to that one article, to be honest. But it spawned all sorts of other articles and radio chats and all the rest of it from that. And I suppose that the point I think that Miriam Donoghue was possibly trying to make was more along the lines that this is new, this is different to what we're used to. And while I've heard people all week saying, I thought we were past this, I thought we'd done all this, we voted yes in the marriage referendum, it is different in an era of Donald Trump's and Marine Le Pen that Ireland is possibly on the verge of electing a gay Taoiseach. We always know about the partner of leaders. The world over, we've talked about the fact that Angela Merkel's husband is rarely seen. He turned up, I think, at a G7 summit recently, and it was all over the front pages of the German newspapers that he had actually gone out in public. We know everything there was about Sam Cam. There was so much comment about Melania Trump and whether she was going to live in the White House or not live in the White House. It's human nature that people talk about partners, and I think that was the point that was being made. This is new, this is different for Ireland. If we have a gay
Taoiseach. I think it's more than that though, isn't it? I mean, Simon Coveney and his wife Ruth are described as a happy, glamorous, glowing couple. Leo was pictured on his own. Image is very important in politics, and it's always assumed that our leaders will fit into a traditional stereotype.
It is always assumed, and we're starting to break out with that stereotype, and I think that is the point here, is that, you know, you do have to remember, like, I don't think Leo Varadkar would be as bothered perhaps by this by that article as a lot of people were on his behalf.
Well, he said yesterday he's not going to make his personal life and family life an issue, and I hope and trust that others won't do so either. That's not saying that he's not bothered about this.
Yeah, well, look, what I would say is that the point I was trying to make is, I suppose, that we had the marriage referendum. There was 600,000 people voted no in that. It's great that it passed and it is there now. But there is still a cohort of Irish people who would... the marriage referendum passed because people talked about it. People told stories. They didn't sit in their hand and pretend it didn't exist, that gay marriage wasn't a thing and it just passed on that reason. It passed because people talked about it and therefore it was normalised. And people who would never have thought of gay marriage as something being acceptable came around to the idea. And I think there is still a cohort of people in Ireland who would have to come around to the idea that our leader of our country could travel the world as a gay man representing us.
So, okay, so you think people might have a problem, the people who voted against
not the majority
the
of people would
with
be fine
with a gay Taoiseach.
The majority of people would be fine with it, but I don't think we just discount those people who might still be a little bit uncomfortable with it.
Alison?
Well, first of all, I suppose it'd be better... Ideally, this wouldn't be an issue at all and not something that we would be discussing. But I don't think we're at that point yet. as a society, despite the as Kevin mentioned, the result in the referendum, and nobody knows that better, I think, than Leo Varadkar himself. I think having felt forced for whatever reasons to come out live on air, possibly in this studio on the Miriam O'Callaghan programme now, in a funny sort of a way, I think that since then he has thrived. He appears to have thrived both personally and professionally. I think there is a legitimate political question in wondering how his sexual orientation will play in a political contest. And I think this is one of the reasons why his side would prefer a faster contest, and you'd wonder, you'd see that the Coveney side are looking for, I think that it could become a little bit more complicated for Leo, you know, given his personal circumstances. What I have a really great difficulty with, and what I wrote about in the Examiner yesterday, was the manner in which the Irish Independent approach this, in that, first of all, it's hard to find an example or think of one where you would have two photographs used side by side 3 days in a row, the first being on the front page of the Sunday Independent. You had the opinion piece, as you mentioned, but even more egregious to me were the headlines that were there and the other photographs that were used, Simon Coveney with his wife, but also with his little girl, off separately to one side, then a photograph of, you know, wholesome family, then the photograph off to the left of Leo and his boyfriend. It struck me as this, you hear this term a lot in relation to Donald Trump, and that of dog whistle, where it means something that's targeted at a certain group of people, that would mean a certain thing to a certain group who will read it. Others might see it in a different way. And to me, the point of it was most definitely to highlight the fact, do you want this? Is this what you want? You know, the wholesome family person in Simon Coveney, or the slightly flighty homosexual? And I really thought that was most unfortunate. And you might argue...
Do you accept that,
you
Kevin?
Might argue, just to finish the point, it might be argued that it wasn't intentional to do that. But I think that if you're in charge of a newspaper and of editorial coverage, you have a responsibility to think very carefully about those things and not make mistakes like that.
What about the argument, though, that Kevin uses, that a substantial number of people voted against the referendum, and so therefore they still have a voice? And we've had a text from one of them who says, correction, 740,000 of us voted no in the marriage referendum, and we have not gone away.
Yes, and I actually wrote about that myself yesterday, and within Fine Gael, no more than any of the rest. There's a wide reflection within the Fine Gael party, I think, of Irish society, certainly compared to Fianna Fáil, you would say. They much more, Fine Gael, put their shoulder to the wheel in terms of the referendum. I would give credit to Enda Kenny, who I think it took him a while to come around to it. But when he did, he really did. But there's bound to have been, even though they may not have said it, a large section, a significant section of the party who were not in favour of it. And that reflects the rest of Ireland. And that is a legitimate point in terms of how that may affect Leo Varadkar's chances. But I think presenting it in that way in the newspaper is not the way to go about it, and I think it's dishonest then to paint it as something else.
I don't have to disagree with you, Alison. To be honest, I mean, maybe that's what you saw. I don't think there was any intention to present Simon Coveney in one way versus Leo Varadkar another way. It was stating two blatantly obvious points, and how this even came about is in its own right just part of the news agenda. The fact that these pictures even existed was on the basis that there was a high society Fine Gael wedding in the Four Seasons last weekend, on the same weekend that there was talks of heaves and all sorts of things taking place, and all these ministers just happened to be there. Otherwise, this would never have come along this week. That was how the topic started. People talk, it's human nature, and there is intrigue behind
but
it.
But there's happenstance, Kevin, and there's judgment and decision making.
But if you read down into the piece,
it's the latter two that
if you read down into the piece, Alison, I mean, the last line in the piece is, and wouldn't it be another great step forward in our maturity as a country on the day of his election, be it, that is, if Leo wins, he can walk down the plinth of Leinster House holding hands with his partner and proudly show Ireland and the world that he has a love and a special person to support him in the challenging time ahead. So I think a lot of people have just jumped on it without actually trying to actually think about why there is, this
I
is
think,
a talking point
yeah,
about
I
why
think,
there
Kevin,
is intrigue
I think
to this.
If that piece had been printed, maybe with a different headline and without the surrounding photographs and the other headlines, your argument would hold a lot more water.
Well, I mean, I did look. There's going to be a lot more of this, in the sense that it's not going to be the key issue, of course, in this election campaign. Leo Varadkar knew all along this was going to surface, that this was going to be a thing. I've seen people claim dirty tricks, and that the Coveney side are pushing this and all the rest of it. Like, it can't be dirty tricks if we're saying we're past that. So we're either past it or we're not. And I think that the reality is that the more we talk about it, the more normalised it can become, and then it doesn't become an issue anymore.
Patrick, what have you got to say about all of this? And I ask you this now, and I've seen two lists of who supports who, and you're on the Coveney side for one list, and you're on Leo's side for another list.
I'm on two lists that I got Google alerts from yesterday, from people that I didn't even speak to, so I don't know how I wound up on it. I'm on one list, and that's in the Kinney's list. And that's the only list that I'm on, and that's the only list that I plan on being on.
And have you a view on what we've just been discussing?
To be honest about it, I didn't even see it during the week. I didn't see the papers at all. I didn't see the Sunday papers, and I didn't see the week papers, because, to be honest about it, there was enough of what I would call rubbish circulating on the airwaves without having to sit down and read it. So I didn't actually, until I looked at it once I knew I was coming on this today. And I think, to be honest about it, Leo's own position on this should be respected. You know, he has asked for, if there is going to be media reports in relation to what work he's doing as Minister for Social Protection, or what he might potentially be doing in the future in a way off distant past or a way off distant future, I don't think it matters. And he has asked, you know, that people would respect that. And I actually don't even believe that, you know, a person's personal life has any impact whatsoever on their ability to be a public rep. You know, if they're elected to do a job and they're appointed by a Taoiseach to do a job, they should just get on and do it.
Because we're getting some interesting texts on this. Fine Gael is a party with a mainly conservative Catholic members. Don't forget Enda Kenny and many senior members were very late converts to the marriage equality campaign. It's probably a bigger step for Fine Gael to have a gay leader than for Ireland to have a gay Taoiseach, from Colin.
You could say the same thing about Fianna Fáil, you could say the same thing about Sinn Féin, you could say the same thing about a whole range of parties. And the fact of the matter is that politics, as opposed to party politics, has gone under a massive transformation in a short period of time. I mean, 20 years ago, would we even have had a discussion on the possibility of marriage equality? No, we wouldn't. But I mean, you know, I have to say that I sat in the Fine Gael parliamentary party room and I listened to Enda Kenny, who is, you know, around for over 40 years and who values his own family very strongly and his own background and is very proud of his own ethos and his own heritage. And the way in which he enunciated and the way he advocated for equality for people was something certainly that stirred me. And I know that, he went on a journey no more than the rest of the country. Because 20 years ago, remember, we wouldn't even have had this conversation.
Not everyone, because the no voters would be straight on to us.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, 20 years ago, would we even have had this conversation? No. And if we did have this conversation with a referendum, would we have had that result? Not in your nelly. So the country has gone, you know, a long way. There's no doubt about that. And the journey that Fine Gael has gone is just reflective of the journey that the country has gone.
Okay. Robert Troy, anything to add or breathe?
No, I think it's totally irrelevant. Minister Varadkar's personal life, I don't think it should come into it, good, bad or indifferent. I think what this should focus on is
the electorate and public take comfort in their leaders having the support of loyal spouses of the opposite sex.
Well, I don't think so. I think it's about the policies. It's about his vision of how he wants, or how either or multiple potential leaders of Fine Gael are going to bring a very right-wing party, and how they want to advance and implement policies that will try and address the challenges that are facing so many people in society today. Both ministers that are putting themselves forward for the position of leader of Fine Gael and what ultimately will probably be Taoiseach of Ireland have been part of a very right-wing government for 5 years between 2011 and 2016. I think what we should focus on is policies and how they will implement policies in terms of addressing the challenges that face so many people in society today. And certainly, I'm not concerned with the sexuality of one particular candidate, and I don't think many people are either.
Okay, well, a listener says, I'm a Catholic, I'm interested in a candidate's personal life. Are they decent people? Do they advocate fairness? Do they pay tax? I'm not interested in their sexual orientation. It's none of my business, says Anne. Breed.
Well, I do think that Fine Gael probably haven't moved on as much as the general population, and that this might be more an issue for them than it is for the rest of us. But if that's the case, then it's reprehensible if somebody would use their vote against another because of his or her sexuality. But I agree with the last texter very much. This whole leadership contest has been an absolute distraction from very serious issues. And this discussion is probably more of a distraction from very serious issues. Not that I know that there's an argument there. I agree with what Alison said. There is a case there. But nevertheless, the country has moved on. If you went into Cherry Orchard, where 99% of the population voted for same-sex marriage, they wouldn't give a damn who Simon Coveney or whomever else Leo Varadkar was married to or not. What they would care about is where are the homes that they need? Where is the equality for people on social welfare? For women who are collecting their pensions, where is the attempts to take all the children that do live in consistent poverty, according to the recent Silk report, out of that poverty? That's what they will be looking
okay,
for.
And because we have this situation now where the Taoiseach is going to carry on at least until after St. Patrick's Day, nothing's going to get done about any of those things.
I heard you saying that earlier on in your Vox Pop. I thought it was extraordinary that a civil servant would say we're not going to present any legislation because nothing will get done. Until
now, they're not attributed comments. They're from commentators in the paper today who said they have spoken to senior civil servants.
Sure, I'm not saying they're attributed to anyone.
Can I finish, Robert? But Noel Whelan said during the week that only 18 pieces of legislation, most of them are just perfunctory matters. The only major one that went through was the housing
bill. There's very serious issues facing us. There was a fire in Mountjoy Square the other night, three buildings gutted with 150 people packed into them. A week ago or 2 weeks ago, Cabin Teely with 70 people packed into a home, a small home in Rathmines with 20 young girls living in it, internet cafes putting people up on the floor for €10 a night. There is a shocking level of serious issues that have to be dealt with, and we need legislation.
So should you not be saying now, Fine Gael, get on with it, sort out your leadership
issues?
We are saying
get the hell on with it. What is like.
Because what we hear a lot of is we're not interested in this conversation about what's going on in Fine Gael. This is, you know, there are so many other issues and you've outlined some of them there. Should we not be putting pressure on them?
I could keep talking, Claire. There's loads of issues. There's the trolley crisis.
And we know that. But until we sort out this issue, we're not going to get to any of those other matters which are
so important.
But
that is disgraceful. That is just one party's problem with their leader. It shouldn't hold up the whole Oireachtas in dealing with the crises that we face. And I don't understand why that happens. I don't understand why the whole lot of us have to be distracted because
the
whole Oireachtas has to be distracted because they cannot decide who they want to have as a leader.
Can she name one piece of legislation that has been held up?
I didn't say that the legislation has been held up. It is being reported.
So name one piece of legislation.
No.
You're a member of the Oireachtas. You're after making a charge.
I'll name one piece of legislation that has been held up. The medicinal cannabis bill is being held
That's
up.
That's not been held up.
It is being
that
held up.
That has not been held up.
We haven't had a date yet for the committee.
And there's a big demand for it out there.
And we have seen the tragic cases of young children.
That has not been held up. And you know that's not true.
We haven't had a date for the committee level.
The Minister for Health has only recently decided. The Minister for Health has only recently decided. There is a thing called pre-legislative scrutiny. You're aware of that. There's also a thing called preparing the heads of a bill. You're aware of that. And there's also a thing called bringing the bill to cabinet. So that is not true. And if that's the only one that you could come up with, I can tell you actually the Taoiseach has four pieces of legislation from the Justice.
You're very defensive on this. You're obviously very defensive.
I'm listening to your rant about something that you absolutely have no evidence to suggest that the Oireachtas has been held up in any way. And this is the Kent
then
that comes from...
Then why is it in the media that the Oireachtas will be held up until this is sorted out?
You're a member of the Oireachtas. Take your responsibility seriously. Bring your pieces of legislation forward.
I'm bringing forward a piece of legislation to decriminalise abortion next week.
You're coming in with this Kent that is for some reason that Oireachtas has been held up and you have one shred of evidence to suggest that.
Me think he does protest too much.
Well, Robert Troy, can you referee this one?
Can I just finish in this, Claire? Because the opposition now, you know, the government now don't control Oireachtas anymore under this whole new palaver called New Politics where the business committee and
you
Breed
think it's rubbish too then, do you?
Absolute total rubbish because Breed is a member of this committee, this so-called panacea to how the Dáil works. And she comes into the Dáil routinely and advocates for something that she voted for.
I'm not a member of that committee.
Well, you stand in every now and again.
I was a member.
Robert Troy, will you settle this one for us? I mean, you're in there too. Is anything getting done?
Well, look, I think it's very worrying that you have even reports that senior civil servants are saying that they're not going to bring forward legislation. These are highly paid officials, permanent officials that are there to do a job. And I'd be worried if that was the case. There's no doubt the last 2 to 3 weeks in the Oireachtas have been chaotic. And I think, you know, listening to ministers protesting today on air that, you know, all's well. If all was well and everything was functioning well, we wouldn't have had a motion of no confidence in the Taoiseach only 2 weeks ago. The reason why we had that, because there is a sense of dysfunctionality, instability and incoherence at the very heart of government at this present level. And you don't seem to subscribe to new politics. We do.
It isn't bad enough, though, for you guys to say, call a halt to this, pull the rug from under it and have an election.
I don't think an election was in the national interest, quite frankly. Our party didn't think the election was in the national interest. Our commitment to
but
this...
But you've just said it's not functioning, it's not working.
Our commitment to this... arrangement was put to the test in the last number of weeks. Had we collapsed the government, what would we have been faced with? We would have lost the opportunity to establish the public inquiry into what was the malpractice that was allegedly going on at the very senior levels of An Garda Síochána. That's something we did not want to do. But let's be very straight clear with you and the listeners that we did put the government on notice that they do need to get their act together, that they do need to start to work in better together in government, that the element of trust between the Independent Alliance and independent ministers and Fine Gael ministers that quite clearly is evidenced there needs to be addressed, or they cannot continue on our support indefinitely into the future.
Alison,
because there are serious challenges out there. Only this week the Minister for Health was down visiting my constituency. There was people on trolleys in our local hospital pushed off to another ward so he wouldn't see it. He went then and visited a hostel for disadvantaged women, where there's a waiting list now, a waiting list to get into a hostel for homelessness. Not alone do we have a huge waiting list for homeless, but we've actually a waiting list for people to get into a hostel. And that's down in a small provincial town in County Westmeath, not up here where there's huge problems in terms of high population levels.
And he was opening a new emergency department in Mullingar Hospital, which had been delayed for ages.
Which hospital were the patients pushed into another room?
He was opening a new emergency
Mullingar
department.
That's ridiculous. Why would you do that when the minister's coming to...
He wasn't opening, the ward because there was no people even invited to it. The senior management in the hospital weren't invited to it. The union officials weren't invited to it. And thankfully, just because of the good gesture of your own colleague, Deputy Burke, I wouldn't have even been aware for it had he not sent me a text message. So it wasn't an official engagement, Patrick.
Okay, and the patients who were waiting were pushed into another room so the minister wouldn't see them. This is like school inspections in the 80s when we had to
smell of fresh paint.
So I'm told, and I'm only relating what I was told by some people who were in the hospital
themselves. The minister spoke to me about this and he said that he actually had a very positive day in Mullingar and spoke to an awful lot of patients in Mullingar Emergency Department, which had to be, you know, refurbished, was long overdue.
I wonder, did he know about the patients in the secret room?
Well, he never... I also was with the minister when he went through Limerick Emergency Department, which is badly overdue as well. The last government prioritised it. The previous one to that didn't. Same in Mullingar. There was no patients moved around.
Daniel Ray claimed in the Dáil there about a fortnight ago that the Taoiseach went to Cork University Hospital and he claimed something similar had happened down there with people being moved into wards as well. So I don't know whether it's become an urban myth that every time a minister visits
the
hospital.
I'm sure the minister would have loved
plenty of stories circulating.
Would have loved the opportunity to tell those people that age doesn't matter. Now, I can't give Patrick an example of legislation that hasn't come forward. But I think in this instance, you know, Noel Whelan coming up with the fact that 18 people, the numbers speak for themselves, really. That's as much evidence as you need. And agreed, everybody is supposed to be involved now in new politics. But if you're the government, you're the government. And the buck ultimately, you know, stops
not in
with
this
the government.
Style, Alison, it doesn't.
But I'm also intrigued, Patrick, to hear you say earlier in the programme that you're on Team Enda. My God, Enda Kenny has done some job. He truly is a past master. His entire party is tied up in absolute knots. They don't know their arse from their elbow. They're in the middle of a leadership contest. None of them feel free enough to admit it. They're terrified of their own shadows. And it is the most extraordinary political scenario that I have seen in an awfully long time. And frankly, they need to step up to the plate now and say, look, here is what is going on.
For what?
We are having a leadership contest. We are not ashamed of it. It is not a matter of shame to say you want to lead your party when there is a contest. There is going to be a vacancy. Breed has just outlined very eloquently a number of the problems that face the country. And it's absolutely true, for as long as this goes on, especially when we're in this pretendy, we're not having a leadership scenario and everyone is going around sort of cloak and dagger, that these important issues aren't being dealt with. Right. So please let them just forget all this nonsense and get on with it.
You hardly expect Patrick to declare which side he's on when we don't know who the front runner is yet.
I don't have a problem with that. I can see how that would be strategic.
Clue what she's doing.
No, but it's this idea.
I really bother you, don't I?
Yeah.
I do actually. Yeah.
There's a reason you're sitting beside each other.
Can I just come back in that? First of all, I mean, Alison, you know, you give a great kind of a visual interpretation of kind of my view of the Alps. But the reality is Fine Gael have made a decision not only last week, but the week before that, and several weeks before that, and several months before that. And the decision hasn't changed. And, you know, we were all expected that we were going to be going into this big showdown at the OK Corral if we believed people who are not members of the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party. Now, I happen to be the only one here.
No, it was your own people who said it was time for him to leave. They never said...
Tell us about
the meeting. They never said a word to him.
They didn't. So I don't know, you know what I mean? It's Mighty Mouse.
The Noel Rocks, the Alan Farrells, and never said a word.
Noel Rock tripped himself up running up on the plinth.
The Mighty Mouse in the radio and Mickey Mouse in the committee room. I mean, that's the reality. Nobody
has confidence in the great leader that Enda Kenny was, and he nearly tripped himself. Well, like, we're not making this up,
No, and I'm not making this up. I was the only person here that was at that meeting, and the man got a 100% endorsement from the party.
It was a bit North Korean.
Well, it wasn't. I mean, it was a bit democratic.
Without the deadly powder.
Because if people have something to say...
They were afraid to say it in the room is democratic.
Well, actually, to be honest about it, there are very... And one of the things I can tell you, Alison, I'm not terrified of anything in politics. And if I have something to say, I'm going to say it. And the reality is that the Taoiseach has asked now on a number of occasions for the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party to affirm his position. He will not lead us into the next election. He will determine his own exit strategy.
But Patrick, is this not highly damaging to your party? Which part of that is
Some difficulty in understanding? I mean, he has made it abundantly clear, and that has been affirmed now unanimously by the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party. And I'm not
in those parliamentary party meetings? Is he scary? Because, you know, I'm going to put down a motion of no confidence from Pat Dearing. I've no confidence in him, says Alan Farrell. They didn't say a word.
I can tell you one thing, that I know Enda Kenny a long time, and the one thing he's not is scary.
He must have had some power over them. That's a very valid question because you have to wonder where the fear is coming from.
There's no fear. I mean, this is bunkum, to be quite honest about it.
But they were brave enough to go on the radio, which is no small thing, and to make their points. And then they couldn't do it in the parliamentary party meeting. That's what you need to ask them.
I'm not here to advocate or answer for them, but I can tell you one thing. Over the last 5 or 6 years...
As you say, you were the only person here who was at the meetings. We've had some fairly rough meetings
at the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party over the last 5 or 6 years, most of which have been reported semi-accurately, I would say. And Kevin will know that too, because most of it has been semi-inaccurate as well.
But
there's no such thing as people having fear in Fine Gael. If somebody has something to say, they stand up and they say it. Sometimes most of the people don't agree with them. Sometimes some people agree with them. And sometimes everybody agrees with them. But last week, the Taoiseach stood up. He spoke for 7 minutes, thereabouts. The reports in the media were not accurate in relation to this 15 to 20 minute speech from script. That did not happen.
I don't think anyone said 15 to 20 minutes. I
didn't read anything during the week, but I was
listening
to enough.
Tell us the rest of it. Go on.
But the rest of it was, when he sat down, he got sustained applause, and that was the end of this. The chairman, Martin Hayden, allowed people the opportunity if they had something to say. Nobody had anything to say. The meeting moved on.
That's extraordinary. What about all the fellas who were out saying I've no confidence in him, he's got to go, motion of no confidence. Did you not say to them, why aren't you so smart now?
Look, if you've had me on for the past couple of weeks, I'd have been saying the same thing. I don't know, you know, I don't believe in this. Willie O'Dea was the person who said it, Mighty Mouse and Mickey Mouse. If you have something to say, say
it.
The reason that they didn't say it is it's clearly evident from across the country and in my own constituency as well, the membership of Fine Gael and people who vote for Fine Gael are of a mind that the man has decided that he... And this is nothing, anything new. He won't lead us into the next election. He will determine his own exit.
I've got to take a break now. Robert, you want to come in really quickly? I'm under pressure.
This week, the meeting with President Juncker proves it.
Okay.
This week, the President meets Juncker.
It'd be all very well if it was just a matter exclusively for Fine Gael, but it's not. It's not just simply about electing a leader. It's about electing a Taoiseach.
Yeah.
And it's about a stability for this country as we face the challenges of the Trump presidency in America and the challenges of Brexit across the water. We need stability now, Patrick, and unfortunately the actions of your government and your colleagues in the Fine Gael party are not contributing to that stability at the moment, whether you like to admit it or not.
But I want
Fianna Fáil are helping better.
Okay, we'll come back to this in a moment. We had, or rather, the Minister for Health has been on Twitter, writing on Twitter. He said he was in Mullingar to see the newly refurbished emergency department and he met many patients. He's delighted to invest significantly in the hospital. That's from him. And Noel Whelan, whose name has come up over the course of the programme as well, says he's going to name one delayed piece of legislation, transposing Victims Directive in Irish law. It's already 14 months overdue. Legislation recently published, and he says...
So the last 2 weeks have nothing to do with that.
Hashtag do nothing dull. Let's take a break. Back with more.
Hashtag.
Welcome back to the programme. A reminder again of our panel. We have Patrick O'Donovan, Minister of State. We have Robert Troy from Fianna Fáil, Breed Smith, AAA, PVP, Kevin Doyle, Group Political Editor of INM, and Alison O'Connor, Irish Examiner columnist. Just before we leave the leadership issue, Kevin, a quick word with you. We've seen, as I said at the top, lots of lists. Who's going to vote for who? You're not buying into the list culture?
Not yet. It's way too early, I think, because... what will decide that ultimately will be, you remember Enda Kenny appointed 18 junior ministers, Patrick being one of them. That was a lot of jobs to keep him as long as he has managed to stay in office. And I think those jobs will have to be discussed before anybody ends up on any list proper. So it's a long way from doing it. I think Leo is probably talking to people who don't have any arm in the game, are slightly ahead as it stands. But it's way too early to try and do a definitive list.
And the longest list is the list of the undecideds anyway.
It is. Well over a third of the party have no idea which way they're swinging yet. Patrick might count himself among those.
Might? He does. Are you saying there's a question mark over the might?
Well... I don't know. It's funny. Both sides are claiming you, Patrick, shall we say.
Well, that's no bad thing. Sure, once I'm in this camp, you can claim the other one.
Of course, the other thing, Claire, is, and maybe this is why Patrick is sitting so nicely on that fence, is that everybody wants to back a winner because there's no point in backing the loser.
Indeed.
So once the momentum swings one way, they'll all tumble in.
I do think it's an interesting point, though, that one of the criticisms of Leo Varadkar over the last number of months, really, I suppose you could nearly say since the summer, that he's appeared too hungry, you know, too out there canvassing. You only have to look at his Twitter feed to see him all over the country, photographs, that maybe in his mind, and this is just a personal theory, that what we were discussing earlier in terms of sexuality and that he saw that he had a disadvantage at the starting line there, and that possibly, you know, that this was what he's trying to get out of people personally.
Are ministers now going around the country doing their job being photographed? Is that a bad thing?
Is being photographed their job?
I think if you were to do an analysis, you would see that the tone of the context changed quite considerably.
You can't be photographed.
Breed Smith, talk to me about Bus Éireann and what's happening, because as I see it, it's on the precipice of strike action. The company is having a board meeting on Monday and they will decide whether to take unilateral action. They say if they don't save 30 million by May, the company's insolvent. The unions have the posters printed and delivered to the depot. So we're in trouble here with this one.
Yeah, this is. I think this is outrageous. It's disgraceful, and it's being painted as if there's no other option other than to penalise the workers who aren't exactly, you know, Lana Walia in their pay, and who have given a huge amount of flexibility and productivity over the years to help the company survive. Now it's all down to them. They've got to save 30 million. Instead of starting at scratch, start at the beginning and look at what's happened to CIE over the years. And since 2009, up to last year, there were consistent cuts in the subvention. Last year, it rose again, but it's still not back to through 2009's levels. So CIE, all of the companies...
And the Minister
CIE,
said yesterday it is going back up.
It is going back up, but it's still not near pre-2009 2009 levels. And the subvention is necessary for public transport because it services towns and villages that need its service. There was a wonderful piece done by RTE on Drive Time last Friday where they went into Abbeyfeel and Listowel and all of the little towns that are serviced by a bus route that's going to be cut, Tralee to Limerick. And they did fantastic interviews with the local people about how important this service was to them. And bus public transport provided by the state is absolutely essential. But the public transport company has been faced both with the cuts to subvention and with the increased seat capacity licensed for by the NTA. The seat capacity from Dublin to Limerick and Dublin to Cork, for example, has been increased by over 100%, which means that the private operators are then reducing their fares in order to compete to get people onto their buses. And they pay, and much worse pay and conditions for their workers. So what's going on here is drag the CIE workers down to the level of the private operators,
okay,
who are notorious for paying badly.
So how do we square the circle? Robert, you're the spokesperson.
The Minister for Transport must get involved. That is my point.
And he says and he's not getting involved.
He says that about every dispute. And I don't know why we have him, because he doesn't, why we even call him a Minister for Transport, because he doesn't seem to have anything to do with it. He said that about Dublin Bus, he said that about Lewis, he's now saying it about Bus Éireann, and there is a problem when the subvention is consistently cut and it does need to be improved.
Right. Well, I think the Minister and his predecessors has to take a certain element of responsibility here, because back in October of 2015, the then department under the Minister of Pascal Donoghue commissioned a report by Grant Thornton to look into the challenges facing Bus Éireann. That report was presented to him and the department in January 2016, and a decision was taken to sit on that report. The total inaction for 12 months has contributed to the financial situation that we're in now, €9 million being lost last year. Earlier this year, I think mid-January, my party brought forward a private member's motion in the Dáil that was in fairness supported by Breed and indeed by every other political party with the exception of the Independent Alliance and Fine Gael. And we asked for the Minister to look at how the licences has been issued by the NTA to private contractors. And private contractors, their sole purpose is to make money. And that's fine, that's their responsibility. But as a country, Bus Éireann has a responsibility to ensure that there's a social service there, to ensure that there's connectivity between the regions. And that's why there's not a level playing pitch between Bus Éireann competing with private providers, say, between Dublin and Cork or many of the other intercity connections.
Bus Éireann, how does this, can I just ask you about your own constituency and how this would impact? I mean, can the private operators do the work of Bus Éireann in your view, in your constituency, or will there be big problems if a strike happens?
Well, at the end of the day, the NTA, in the event of a strike, it's going to totally discommode tens of thousands of people, not exclusively to my constituency, but to many, many constituencies of people who rely exclusively on Bus Éireann to get to work, to get to college, or just to go about doing their daily duties. So a strike is going to discommode tens of thousands of people across Ireland. It's going to heap additional financial pressure on the company that's in such serious financial situation at the moment. So what we have said, and what a motion has been passed in the Dáil, calling on the Minister to, number one, increase the subvention that's paid through the Department of Social Protection for the free travel, because incidentally, that has not been increased since 2010, despite the fact the number of people availing of it has increased
Robert,
since...
There's evidence that the private operators get a bigger subvention for free travel...
We had the Department of Social Protection in front of the Oireachtas Committee on Transport this week, and they confirmed that, number one, they can't be 100% accurate in terms of how they pay out the free travel to private contractors, but it would appear anecdotal evidence that it's a greater percent or a greater subvention is given to private contractors than Bus Éireann.
Okay.
It hasn't increased since 2010. The public service obligation has increased last year, but it's still in 2009 it was 50
right.
million. At the end of last year it was
okay.
33 million.
Patrick, I want to get Patrick in here on this, because you're... Transport, your tourism and sport in that department, but Shane Ross is the minister in charge there. Pat Leahy puts it nicely today. He says the response of the Minister for Transport to the impending meltdown of half of the public transport system is that it's none of his business.
Well, first of all, the last two contributors referred to the privatisation and competition and things like that. That actually is a result of the Public Transport Regulation Act 2009, which was brought in by the then Minister for Transport, Noel Dempsey, which allowed for private operators onto commercial routes. And there's 23 million people use commercial routes.
Okay, so apart from being Fianna Fáil's fault, is it right that Shane Ross should not get involved here?
Hold on a second now. I mean, if you want an answer, I can give it to you. I mean, the last two contributors are bemoaning the fact that we have competition on the roads. That didn't happen by accident.
That's not what we said. And it's the level of licences that the NTA are issuing.
I didn't bemoan competition. I actually welcomed it.
Can I just make one point? The NTA are the statutory agency that are responsible for the issuing of licensing under that Act. And in order, you know, people are going around saying that you need to reduce the number of licences or withdraw licences and things like that. You can't do that unless you repeal the legislation and you buy back licences. And we don't know how
much
that
will cost. There's no obligation on the NTA to issue as many licences as they have done.
Can I finish?
It's just that you won't answer the question, Patrick, that I asked you. We're going to have a strike, possibly called on Monday.
It's important.
You had
two opposition people paint this picture that somehow that this has after happening just fell out of the bottom drawer. The reality is that there is a legislative and regulatory framework that is around since 2009 when Noel Dempsey introduced it as to what the Department of Transport's role is, what the National Transport Authority's role is, and what Bus Éireann operating expressway, which is a completely independent commercial entity and which cannot be subjected by the state.
Fair enough, but there's going to be not much use in giving out about Noel Dempsey if the pickets are there on Monday or Tuesday and people have no buses to use.
You asked what the Minister for Transport can do.
I did.
Under the legislation as set out by the Oireachtas, the Minister for Transport role is the shareholder. He cannot interfere in a system like this and he cannot introduce subvention for a commercial company, which is expressway. And it's expressway which has a third of the overall passenger numbers, of which there's 23 million on the commercial route. Bus Éireann Expressway has a third.
So there we go. He cannot legally, you're saying, intervene.
Sorry, he can intervene. What's going on now is a structural change in Bus Éireann. That's what's happening. Yeah. A structural change is ongoing, and that's as per their own document that they issued, the management of Bus Éireann issued to the unions and their talks last week. He can get involved in relation to the level of subvention from the Department of Social Protection. You're right on one point, Patrick. He can't subvent the commercial route. He can't. But what he can do is he can transfer some of them routes that are not profit making, never will be profit making, over to the public service obligation route to ensure that the people who depend on them can rely on them into the future. And in relation to the NTA and the legislation that was introduced in 2009, you're right there. But there has been a review has commenced on that NTA. That review of the licensing arrangement is on the minister's desk for in excess of 5 months. I asked him when he was before the Oireachtas Committee, could he share that with the rest of the members of the Oireachtas Committee? He said he would look at sharing it, but perhaps there might be some sensitive commercial information on it which he couldn't share.
Okay, Kevin Doyle,
The CEO of the NTA came in this week and they said they don't know the commercial situation of the private operator. So I don't know who's contradicting who in relation to that.
They also said that 11 applications were refused and only 8 granted in the recent number of years.
Can you draw a line under this first, because we have to move on.
Yeah, I think the whole Shane Ross thing and the boundaries of what he can and can't do, and it was always Pascal Donoghue's line, in fairness, it's not just Shane Ross who has always said, I can't intervene. I spoke to him about this on Thursday and I've rarely seen a minister so definitive in his logic for why he won't get involved, and that is they just want my checkbook. But that's not the only thing.
To Dublin Bus.
But it's not just the problem. That's fine, that's his answer. But there's a problem here in that the minister doesn't necessarily have to open up the checkbook. He sets the tone and the environment for this discussion to take place, and he can help that. And he's certainly not. If you look at what has happened in health, where we've had the doctors, we've had the support staff, and we still have the nurses threatening strikes. So two out of those three strikes have been gone now. The minister wasn't in the room, but he was involved in them. His officials were briefing him and he was making motions in public.
I mean, what better example, Kevin has just mentioned, between Minister Pascal Donoghue, and contrast, I might say, rather than example, and Minister Shane Ross. There are ways of saying things. There are ways of being politic.
And that's the tone.
That's a particular skill set that I think Shane Ross could maybe do with going away in a course on. And I think that sort of thing would really help the matter a lot.
All right, coming
up after
the break.
But it's very serious because the strike will cripple the public transport system and a lot of workers.
It is imminent. Stay quiet then.
And it could spread. There could be contagion from other workers in CIE.
The same minister who accused Fianna Fáil of pandering to vested interests, this is in relation to drink driving legislation, we'll talk about that in a minute. Now, Shane Ross, Minister Shane Ross, wants to introduce mandatory bans for all drink drive offenders. But Fianna Fáil said he was taking a reckless course. Robert Troy, you said he was being lazy, and you said there was nothing to suggest that such a road safety measure will be effective or will save lives. He, in turn, accused you of pandering to vested interests. So where are we at with the whole thing?
Well, I suppose let's put it in context. He brought this proposal before the Oireachtas Committee on Transport. The reason why he was in before it is because I, together with my other colleagues across the committee, sought for a number of sessions to focus primarily on road safety, because we were concerned at the number of people, the increase in road fatalities in 2016. The reason why there was such an increase in fatalities in 2016 was because of the lack of enforcement.
And 187 deaths on our roads, an increase of 15%.
Yeah, and if you know, according to the Road Safety Authority, for the month leading up to Christmas, there was actually a 34% drop in the number of road deaths compared to 2015, and a 27% drop compared to 2014. Why was that? Because there was a clear physical enforcement presence of an Gardaí enforcing the existing legislation on our road at that time.
And in the month of December, there were 738 people who were caught drink driving, compared with 549 for the same period in 2015.
Why? Because
there was more enforcement. But what it also tells us is more people are still going out drinking and getting into their cars.
But what we don't know is what level of alcohol was in their systems. And that's the point I asked Minister Ross to come back to me with a detailed breakdown of the figures that he's making his assumption in terms of his proposal. I think it's very wrong for him to accuse yesterday both myself and Micheál Martin to say that we're pandering to vested interests. Micheál Martin is the man who introduced a smoking ban against a huge anti-smoking ban lobby.
What this is about, in my opinion, is
the minister, with a good intention, looking to bring forward something that appears to be a positive headline, but I don't think it will actually.
So you say he hasn't done the research, Patrick. You're from a rural constituency, and there are people who want to go out and have a pint and drive home. Where do you stand on this?
I have a brother Republican, and I have family members that are Republicans, and you know, that's the first thing, and I have no problem in saying that. But I'm also a strong advocate of proper, you know, road safety, and I don't condone drink driving. But I watched the Oireachtas Committee on Transport. I wasn't at that meeting, but I watched it. And deputies of all parties asked for the evidence to be brought forward. I think that's the starting point for this. You know, I have no problem.
So do you support Shane Ross or not in this?
Well, I have no problem in enforcing and in strengthening provisions, but I'd like to see it based on evidence, and I'd like to see an evidence base. And I know that, you know, within Fine Gael, there are concerns. Within the Independent Alliance as well, there are concerns in relation to this. Within Fianna Fáil, there are concerns. There are concerns in general. And I want to see an evidence-based approach to this. And certainly, I don't think anybody condones drink driving. And I think, you know, it's very easy to say, well, you know, if you're not coming down 100% in favour or against this, that you're being some bit ambiguous. I, at the end of the day, I have no truck with anybody who drinks and drives, but I would like to see, you know...
But maybe one pint is okay.
Well, I mean...
I don't condone it, but I don't mind if you do a little bit of it.
I think it's ridiculous. Yeah, I think if the people are concerned...
Well, if you have a blood alcohol level that's established in law at the moment, and there are penalties in place, as Robert said, I think the biggest issue is in relation to enforcement, and we have seen because of the Garda numbers that dropped.
I think there is a problem with the isolation of people in rural Ireland, but there may be a solution to our bus service. Extend it so that you have local minibus services to take people out on social occasions and bring them home again. Right. And Bus Éireann could buy a load of little minibuses.
It'll never make the Dáil floor before the next election anyway.
My constituency colleague
in the Independent Alliance says it's dead in the water, so I don't know.
Thank you all very much for coming in. Enjoy the rest of the Saturday, of your Saturday, and good luck to Ireland in the rugby. Coverage starts at 2:30, but coming up next on RTE, Callan's Kicks.
Saturday with Claire Byrne was produced by Kay Sheehy. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. The researcher, Rona Tarrant, and sound supervision was by Noel Roberts.